I want to thank everybody for coming. I appreciate the kind words, and I just want to begin very briefly by saying it is a pleasure to be speaking with my dear friend Rabbi Turetsky. I hope this is the first of many joint teaching opportunities, and I look forward to teaching, but I'm actually more excited to listening, so I'm going to hurry up so that I can listen to your shiur very quickly. When Rabbi Turetsky and I were thinking about getting together to share some Torah, we thought that it made most sense to speak about Torah to yeshivas who are focused on Talmud Torah, as part of a general life of Avodas Hashem, but built on the centrality of learning. And we thought that made sense for a theme of learning. And briefly, even though we don't have much time, I'd like to speak about what I think arguably is the building block or the cornerstone of Talmud Torah, of learning, and that is the Rebbe-Talmud relationship. There's obviously much to say about this on an emotional or guidance level, but I'd like to speak about it even more basically than that. And that is, from a Makoros perspective, what should one be looking for in a Rebbe? What is the raison d'etre? What is the mission of a Rebbe? And not only how to be a good Rebbe, but a question which I think is not asked enough, how does one be a good Talmud? And I believe that, in fact, if we examine both of those questions, we will find that they actually merge in a very, very beautiful, slightly dialectical, but mainly a complementary and reciprocal way in which we can, the more we understand what it means to be a good Rebbe, we'll appreciate how to be a good Talmud, and the more we understand what it means to be a good Talmud, we'll understand better what we're looking for in a Rebbe. If one asks the question simply and directly, what should one want, what should one look for themselves, for their children in a Rebbe, this very basic question is already asked by the Gemara itself in two places, in the first source on your sheet. I mentioned one of them, the Gemara Moed Katan, which asks, in essence, the question, what should one looking for in a Rebbe? What's the standard? And the Gemara actually gives a very shocking and high standard based on a very well-known pasuk in Malachi. Im doma harav l'malach Hashem, yivakshu Torah mipiv. Im lav, al yivakshu Torah mipiv. No less, says the Gemara. What should you be looking for in a teacher, in a Rebbe? A Rebbe should be comparable, should remind you of an angel, a malach. And somehow less than that, short of that, you shouldn't be looking for it. If the Rebbe reminds you and looks like a malach, then you should study Torah from him. And if not, don't learn from him. Now, what does this mean? This is quite dramatic, and I have to say, I don't remember the first time I learned the Gemara, but the first time I remember the Gemara once I was a Rebbe, it gave me pause, to say the least. What exactly does that mean, that a Rebbe has to be like an angel, like a malach? So there are many, many different interpretations, some of which speak to ascetics, extreme piety, and I'm sure there's a certain grain of truth in all of them. But what has always resonated for me in general, and I think certainly in a shiur like this, is the explanation that is given by the Baal Sefer Hafla. The author of the Hafla also wrote a commentary on Maseches Kiddushin, a very well-known sefer called the Sefer HaMakne. In an introduction to that sefer, he quotes the Gemara. And he explains in source number 2, using a well-known distinction, which is found in many other Sfarim, between human beings and angels. And he gives you the sources, but you don't have time to read them all inside together, but you see them here on the sheet. On the top part of the source, he points out that from various sources in Psukim, that human beings are referred to, you see at the end of the first line there, as a mahalach. Human beings walk, and it doesn't mean literally just physically walk, but human beings can move from station to station, from different places in their life. The more they do good things, the more we can grow and get better. Unfortunately, of course, we have Bechira Chavshis, we can make the wrong decisions. But humanity, the human existence is not static, it's fluid. And by definition, by essence, human beings are mahalchim, we move from one place to the next. However, based on Psukim, he quotes, and others, as I say, others have said this before him and since, angels are referred to not as mahalchim, but as omdim. And of course, that's the metaphor even of the one leg. We keep our feet together when we imitate angels in things like Kedusha. Because angels, he explains, angels are who they are. It may be a very high level, but one thing they aren't is they don't have the ability to grow. They don't have the ability to progress. An angel is given, again, this is an idea we're all familiar with, a certain mission, each angel with their own, a very high and elevated mission, but that's it. They are who they are. They are fully dedicated to the task. But there is no possibility of moving. There is no possibility of growing. And in light of this distinction, Says the Sefer HaMachneh something amazing. If you look at the second half of source number 2 where it's underlined, that's the Pshat he says in the Gemara. Shaharav b'shar shemalame l'talmidav yosim kol magamas ponav la'alos es talmidav ulhazbirim b'fonim yafos. When a Rebbe is teaching, and I would say not only each shir, but take a step back. When a Rebbe decides, I want to be a Rebbe, that's going to be my career, that's going to be my chosen life profession. When a Rebbe, a person decides, I'm going to be a teacher of Torah, says the Baha'u'llah, he has to be not like a human being. He has to be like an angel. He has to say, I have a mission to teach Torah, to help elevate and inspire my students. V'zehu. And that is it. That is my only focus. He says amazingly in that second underlined part there, V'lo yachsho v'oso sho'a to Elis Alios Atzmo. He should think nothing about his own growth. What's best for him? What would be the best style of shir that he'd like to give? What topic would he like to speak about? What type of shir will help him grow? None of that can be in his mind. That's a human thought. It's a natural thought. But it's totally incorrect. And says the Machneh, it's disqualifying. To be a Rebbe worthy that people should be mevakesh Torah mipicha, you have to have one focus and one focus only. What's best for the students? And therefore he continues, that is the focus. Ki chashvu alios atzmo, if a Rebbe thinks about what's best for him, humanias alios talmidov, then he will prevent the Talmud from growing. V'tzorach lios ba'oso shah kemalach hanikra omeid lo yakshov harav ki bezeh yismai chachmaso. An astounding, astounding pshat. I don't know if this sounds, you know, maybe obvious to you, but I can tell you, being on the other side, Rebbeim are human. I remember years ago, my first year in YU, at the time I was struggling in a Rosenzweig shir, quite overwhelmed, like anyone would be when you first encounter the Eish of his Torah. And I'm embarrassed to say it now, but I went to him suggesting that perhaps I should switch shiurim. I understood shir well enough to know that's where I wanted to be, but not well enough to actually be learning anything, really. So I said to him, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but we among friends, I said, you know, I could tell I want to be with you, but I'm not ready yet. So where would you recommend I go so that I can somehow get my way back? And I started this, I won't share you all the specifics of the conversation, but I started in my own ridiculous 19-year-old way, listing the names of other very senior Rebbeim, and what I considered their Derech HaLimud, as I understood it with all the power and knowledge that I possessed as a 19-year-old. And therefore, which one of these, and this Rebbe teaches this way because he believes X is important, and this Rebbe teaches that way because he believes Y is important. And I'll never forget, Rosenzweig let me finish, but he did pause and he just said, I just want to point out, Rebbeim don't just teach because they believe X or Y is important. Rebbeim also do what they're good at. And I was like, whoa, Rebbe, you're just like human. and he's right. But there's a certain natural urge. Everyone wants to do what they're good at. Everyone wants to teach a style or a content that will help them. But says the Machneh, you have to overcome that urge. That's not being a Rav who's Doma Lamal Hashem Tzavakos. Because if you're worried about what's best for you, what type of shir you want to give, what type of Torah you want to give, not going to be best for the Talmud. But that's quite a high level. How does a human being, a natural human being, how does one achieve, even aspire to such a high level? So I think the answer is based on the well-known Medrash in the Sifrei in source number 3. The Rambam quotes it in the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah. V'shinantam levanecha, we should teach our children, Eilu Talmidecha. Chena tamotze b'chol makom, says the Medrash, shehatalmidim kruyim bonim. A key, even more basic then focusing on what your Talmud's needs are, what leads you to that, if you're truly a Rebbe, is that you view all of your students as children. And as a parent, you only want what's best for them. You're not worrying about what's best for you. As the Gemara says in source number 4, B'chol adam eskanei chutz mibno utalmido. There's a certain natural overlap, or at least there ought to be, between a Rebbe and his students, and a parent and his or her children. And just like there's in a normal, healthy parent-child relationship, it's an important qualifier, but in a normal, healthy parent-child relationship, there's nothing that gives the parents more nachas than their children should be more successful, should do better in their career, be more successful, be a bigger Talmud Chacham, make more money, whatever it is. achieve a higher promotion in the field. A normal, healthy parent is thrilled when their child is succeeding, even more than they are. So too a Rebbe as well, because if you truly view your Talmidim as children, all you want is the best for them. And I would suggest, and I haven't seen anyone make the connection, but to me it seems obvious that that's what's underlying the same idea of the Matneh. If you truly view your Talmidim as children, then you want what's best for them and not what's best for you. And this recalls or remarks something that Rav Rosenzweig often used to quote, and that is his interpretation of the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. In the opening Mishnah of Perkei Avos, we know after the list of the Mesorah, it mentions that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola taught three things, have a Metunim Bedin, finally a Susyog LaTorah, but in the middle, He'emidu Talmidim Harbe. And Rav Rosenzweig many times explained, I'm sure Rabbi Turetsky has heard this from him as well, and I later saw, and I believe someone once eventually showed Rav Rosenzweig, even though he had been saying this on his own for many years, but at some point in some lecture, many decades ago, Rav Soloveitchik had already made the idea. Why, as the Mefarshim and Perkei Avos already point out, why does the Mishnah use the term he'emidu? Right? You should say yilamdu. Teach many students. Right? If the goal is, as many of the classical Mefarshim do, they say this is actually an educational issue. Should we be elitist and only take the best students? Or should we have a Beis Hillel approach, a Hillel approach of open the Beis Medrash to anyone who wants to learn? So it sounds like the Mishnah is poskening and that machlokes, he'emidu talmidim harbe, have open admissions, invite as many talmidim as you can to the yeshiva. But if that's the case, why he'emidu? Why the verb he'emidu, which really means to stand? So if you look in the next source, number 6, in the second paragraph, Soloveitchik gave an interpretation of this, which again I heard many times years before I saw this in writing. This is a book that just came out a year or two ago called Halachic Morality, which includes in the first few chapters of Soloveitchik's Shiurim on Perkei Avos, that the verb he'emidu implies the development of the free and independent disciple who could stand on his own two feet, who's able to succeed and master things on his own. He'emidu milashon, stand up to Talmidim, give them independence. And this similarly is also something in which parents and Rebbeim, they have appropriate relationships with their children or students, this is also what they want. As much as you want to hold them close, as much as you want to nurture them and give, every parent knows that to ultimately be successful, to give your children a truly healthy basis, you have to allow them to grow, you have to allow them to be independent. And says the Rav, said Rav Rosenzweig, it's the same idea with Talmidim. We give them everything, but it's not to keep them close, it's to help them stand on their own two feet. As the I don't know who said this, but one of those famous aphorisms talked about parents, how parents give children but two things, roots and wings. If you don't give your children a basis, roots, they can't stand on their own two feet. But if you hold them too close, if you don't give them wings so they can fly on their own, you'll suffocate them, you'll impoverish them. And it's the same thing with the Rebbe and the Talmud. He'emidu Talmidim Harbe. Rebbeim are there to dedicate everything, or should be, to their Talmidim for what's best for them. What's best for them is ultimately to be able to stand on their own two feet. If this is the case, I'd like to turn our attention now to complete this year to the second half of the equation. If we've seen that the focus of a Rebbe is supposed to be one who's completely in all focus and dedicated to what's best for his students, who wants to give them independence and does all of that because a Rebbe is supposed to be like a spiritual father, one who loves his children and wants best for them, even if it's even better and more independent than the Rebbe, but he gives everything he has. So the flip side is obviously equally important. What should the Talmud be doing? How should the Talmud be looking for himself? What are the mission, what are the responsibilities of the student? We know the mission in Perkei Avos tells us, Asei Lecha Rav. But that's also a weird term. Why Asei Lecha? Why not find, have? What does that mean to make for yourself a Rav? So perhaps part of that interpretation relates to an idea which is found in a number of Gemaras. I gave you two of them here in sources 7 and 8, and those are two Gemaras in Brachos that speak about a well-known idea, but a quizzical idea, a surprising idea, which I'd like to explain for a few minutes, and that is the importance of what Chazal referred to as shimush. The Gemara says in source number 7, Gedola shimusha shel Torah yoser milimudeha, that somehow being mishamesh, attending the Rebbe, attending to the Talmud Chacham, is even more important than learning from him. Shimush is greater than learning. Or even more shocking, perhaps, the second source, number 8, the Gemara Brachos Mem Zayin, Afilu Kara Vashina Shana Velo Shimush Talmud Chacham, even if you learned a lot, but you were never mishamesh the Talmud Chacham, Hare Zeh Am Haaretz. It's as if you learned nothing. And there are other Mamari Chazal, if you can believe it, to go even further than that. So apparently, learning without Shimush is not only secondary, it's not only Gedola, without Shimush, it's nothing. But what does that mean? Again, in our, we live in a somewhat jaded and often cynical world, and I can't blame people sometimes for being that, given some of the news stories out there. But if you didn't know anything, you would think this is like the ultimate ego trip. This is like the recipe for the unhealthy, almost abusive Rebbe-Talmud relationship. It's just supposed to be what the Talmud can do for the Rebbe and serving him. It sounds like the words are saying, and yet it can't obviously be that that's what Chazal had in mind. So what does that mean? Shimusha yoser milumuda. Somehow, what does that mean? You get the Rebbe coffee, that's better than if you pay attention in shir. You tie the Rebbe's shoes, that's more important than whether you're learning. I mean, it just seems absurd. What do Chazal have in mind? Again, many, many interpretations to this idea. I'd like to share with you two. One is, yeah, please.
Why do you assume that that's a ridiculous idea?
Okay.
What I'm asking is that...
This is the son of a Rebbe, by the way, I just want to point out.
And my father used to always have one guy that would get him coffee every morning.
And an orange.
There we go. What happened was, is that guy had a very special relationship with my father.
Correct, I hear.
I'm saying, I'm not so sure.
Fair enough.
Again, I don't want to...
Good, no, no.
But there may be a Shimush element.
Yes, good, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. Yes, yes, 100%. Yes, again, if you want to talk what they gain from... So, I'm getting to it.
Sorry.
I am getting to it. I think what you're describing, I think, is probably going to be similar to our second interpretation.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, I think you're right. In healthy relationships, again, it's a significant thing. You know, many of us have heard stories. People, I guess they probably would be at the moment in their lower or mid-50s. People of that generation who were Talmidim of Soloveitchik, as he was getting older and infirm, a number of them became Misharsim of the Rav and have incredible relationships and stories. Even older, some of them.
16 of us.
Okay, some of them. Okay, anyway. Yeah, so it's true. The question, though, is not whether Shimush... I'll tell you what I mean by that. What my question implied, maybe I appreciate the question, you helped me refine it. I don't mean that Shimush can't be a healthy and positive thing. But Chazal is going even further than that. Gedola Shimusha Yoser Milimuda. Right, to use your example, right? If all the Talmud did was get your father coffee, but then didn't listen to the shir, would you say that that's greater than listening to the shir? It's hard to believe. So it's hard to believe Chazal meant that in a very little, extreme way. But what did they mean? So again, many interpretations. I'll just briefly mention two of them, which I think are very, very important. The Maritzchios, in source number 9, quotes an idea on his own, which he then says, Ra'iti b'shem ha'gona chasin mi'vilna. So he says it's an idea from the Vilna Gaon. Says the Maritzchios, you know what it means? We don't mean getting the coffee. Again, other Mepharshim might interpret it that way. That's a simple understanding. But says Maritzchias, no. Hashimush nikra gam kein limud. It's referring to a type of involvement with the Rebbe, non-book learning, to be sure, but still limud. Namely, halimud is shomea halachos. When Chazal used the term limud, or Talmud Torah, or limud Torah, that's actual learning, book learning, so to speak, as we would say. But hashimush, serving the Rebbe, so to speak, being close to the Rebbe, outside the classroom, if you will, hainu, that's also learning. What kind of learning? Halomed mehis nahagus. It's talking not about serving the Rebbe, but about observing the behavior and the actions of the Rebbe. And the Maritzchias gives two very famous examples. K'moshamitzinu shahalchu ha-talmidim le-beis ha-knesses l'ros es nagus rabam. And not only the beis ha-knesses, they went into the home to watch the Rebbe as a father, the Rebbe as a husband, to observe the Rebbe's actions and behaviors. And he says something very powerful number at the bottom of the page, limud kazen nishrash belev haroa v'gedola milimud ayde shmua. This idea, which again I think modern educational experts have now reached, is something that the Maritzchias and the Vilna Gaon understood hundreds of years ago. That the out-of-class experience, the observation of the Rebbe in the house. I was fortunate in my last 5 years in NYU, I dafka b'kavana, I moved to Riverdale to be Mishareis Rabbi Willig. There were other benefits to living in Riverdale too. But that's not, the other benefits came were side benefits. The reason we moved was to be there. We dafka, all the young couples were at the RJC, we went to the Youngers of Riverdale, and I kind of became an unofficial assistant rabbi, summer rabbi, but it was really to be there with him to observe. To just get a sense of what it was like to be in his home, to see him in shul, to see him with Balabatim. And says the Maritzchias, says the Vilna Gaon, that is something that can be even more powerful. In other words, what, and I'll say it this way, to provide a perfect a contrast to the second explanation we'll see in a moment, what the Vilna Gaon and the Maariv Tzvi are saying is, shimush, the involvement, being at the Rebbe's home, observing the Rebbe, I'll add, perhaps playing ball with the Rebbe. If you play ball with me, you actually have a chance to win. If you play ball with Rebbe Turetsky, he's going to kill you, so I don't recommend that. You better be good if you're going to bring his game. Yeah, no, right? We're like sharp elbows. Anyway, right, but you have a chance of beating him on the basketball court, not on the tennis. Exactly, not on the tennis.
Everything's in.
Correct, exactly. All right, Marshall Cole stories later. Anyway, so but with the Maariv Tzvi, what the Vilna Gaon are saying is that the shimush we're describing, the ability to have what a Talmud can achieve by having a relationship with his Rebbe beyond the classroom, is that there's new and additional things that they can learn. There's a whole form of Torah, which is not just in a sefer. Torah is a living thing. And if you're close with your Rebbeim, if you observe them in life, in all situations, you can learn that living Torah. But if you turn over the page, you see an alternate interpretation suggested by the Maharal. And if Maariv Tzvi got, you know, anticipated a modern educational insight, I think the Maharal really got it right in this case. Maharal says something different, I think. Perush HaDavar, source number 10, Kamashamish the Talmud Chacham, Hine HaTalmud Mischaber El Harav, Ade Shimusha Shel Torah, Ubeze HaTalmud Mekabel Min Harav. Maharal, I don't think, is saying the same thing as Maariv Tzvi. He's not saying that by observing the Rebbe in his home, with his children, you'll see things and learn new things. Rather, says the Maharal, by being with the Rebbe, whether it means getting him his coffee or just driving somewhere with him or driving somewhere, whatever it is, but that downtime together, if you will, says the Maharal, it's not that you'll learn new things, but the, quote, old things, the things that he was anyway teaching you, will be deepened. You'll be closer to the Rebbe. As he says in the third line after this, or the fourth line, he says, Hu hiskarvus el talmud chacham ba'atzmo. Again, something which we take for granted in our, again, I think in a healthy way, in our world of informal education, and it's just like Kollel and Rebbe Talmud, but I don't think it was nearly obvious when the Maharal said it. There's being mischaber to the Torah of the Rebbe that you get from the classroom, that you get from the shir, that you can get from yutorah.org. But to be mischaber el harav atzmo, to have a relationship with the Rebbe, that happens ayidei shimush, not necessarily through the book learning, through the conversations and the experiences and the interactions. And that's another dimension which is not only important in its own right, but it's important because that's what allows the Torah to seep in and be deeper. I think the Maariv Tzvi, the Vilna Gaon, are suggesting that there's new things you can learn from the Shimush. Maharal is not describing something new as new information, new Torah, but that the relationship itself is valuable and something that can deepen. Yes, it's true. When you're hanging out with the Rebbe, you may see something and learn something from that. But that's not necessary for the Maharal. The Maharal is saying just the very act of being Mischaber El Harav or Atamar Chacham Atzmo, that itself deepens. And in fact, if you won't read it inside, but if you turn back to the front, the first side of the sheet, the first interpretation that Rav Soloveitchik gave to Ha'emidu is exactly this idea of the Maharal. Maharal and the Rav don't often go together. But in this case, his first interpretation, which I don't like as much as a Perush in Ha'emidu, but as an idea, the first interpretation of the Rav said there is exactly what the Maharal says. That Ha'emidu, from the perspective of the Rebbe, the Rav says what the Maharal says from the perspective of the Talmud of Mishamesh. That the more you interact with the Rebbe, the more you commit to him on a personal level, the closer you are, and as a result, the Torah, which you might have learned anyway, will be deepened and more real. Yes?
It's possible that the two are really the synthesis of one idea, because if you start with the proposition, Talmidim don't see it as much as people when they then go out and have to work, but that the notion that there should not be a duality or a dichotomy between the base medrash and the outside world.
Yeah, I can hear that.
If you need to be walking Torah and seeing the Torah in the world 24/7, then maybe the two notions come closer to each other because you're absorbing from the
Rebbe. I'm focused on the individual players, so to speak, in this drama, the Rebbe and the Talmud. What you're saying is if you take a step back and look at just the goal of Torah, so that in fact they really overlap. Or as Rav Huttner would say, right, a broad life, not a double life. Right, the more you see Torah is a living thing, then the more these things come together. And that's actually, in fact, part of my point, which I want to get to now as we move into the last 5 minutes of my shiur, which is that I think that as much as we can look at the Rebbe and his responsibility to the Talmud in one sand, and the idea of a Talmud, he has to be Mesharis, his Rav, he has to, you know, be Vakesh Talmud, I think, in fact, there's a certain overlap in a way that really they each, there's a certain reciprocity in which they each contribute to the other, which I'd like to focus on now for the final section of the shiur. Source number 11 is an amazing Gemara in Sukkah. Again, many Mefarshim speak about this. It's one of Rav Rosenzweig's favorite Gemaras as well. And that is the amazing statement that Rebbe Eliezer makes about himself. Lo amarti davar shlo shamati mi pirabi me'olam. Right? Shmuel Bar Yochai, Talmud, he says, I never, Rebbe Eliezer says, said anything that I didn't previously hear from my Rebbe. They'd ask him a question in that Gemara, he says, I can't answer you, because I didn't hear from the Rebbe, I can't answer. But the question is obvious. First of all, just intuitively, it just seems impossible. Could it be? The great Rebbe Eliezer, he never said anything he didn't hear from in Shir. But it's not only logically impossible, it's factually incorrect. As the Mishnah, or the Brisa and Avos Rabbi Nosson, source number 12, points out, at one point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and they're pushing Rabbi Eliezer to say something to Beis Medrash. He didn't want to, but he finally did. Dochak alav, he got up and he gave a drasha, uposach v'darash v'dvarim shloshamatan ozen mi'olam. He didn't just say amazing chidushim he'd never heard from his Rebbe, he said amazing chidushim that no one had ever said anywhere, ever before. He was an unbelievably creative thinker, an unbelievable creative mind. Abba Machadish, Amayin HaMizkaber, he said incredibly new things. And clearly they weren't things he'd heard from his Rebbe. So how could it be? Was he lying when he said, I only said things that in my Rebbe? He was just a way of getting out of a question? He was just trying to dodge? What does that mean? So I think the idea, which to some extent Rav Rosenzweig likes to speak about as well, but I here just to give you a written source for it, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, in a very beautiful piece in the Sichos Musar, in source number 13, he explains what we're describing here is a certain methodology. Bir Hanyan Kahu. Of course, Rabbi Eliezer said things he hadn't heard from his Rebbe. Of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't teach him everything. Before he said anything, he thought to himself, would my Rebbe have said such a thing? He had been given the Kalian, he had been given the methodology on his level to learn and to think and to analyze the way his Rebbe would. And a true Talmud who has been not only spent many years learning from his Rebbe, but Misharis the Rebbe, has a certain intuitive sense. Now, can this be abused? Like everything, yes, it could be. And we see this, unfortunately, sometimes in our life, where people will say certain things that they want, and they cloak it in, my Rebbe would have agreed. Maybe. So, yes, things can be abused. But again, in a responsible and healthy way. Again, I find this even on my own level very often, certain ideas I think of, and I can't remember, did I hear this from my Rebbe? It sounds like the kind of thing he would have said, and sometimes I'm really just confused, and sometimes I really feel like I thought of it on my own, but there's no way I would have thought of it had I hadn't been first a Talmud of his. And in fact, Rav Rosenzweig used to say that the Rav was very much similar to this as well. The Rav used to sometimes say in Shir that when he had a difficult Rambam, he would see the Dmus Dyukno of his father or his grandfather, and especially if he thought he was saying a bad Svara, he could hear them yelling at him. In other words, I don't think you have to go as far or as extreme as Rebbe Eliezer. And never say anything unless you first are convinced that your Rebbe would have said it. I don't think you have to go as far. Rebbe Eliezer did. But the value that he's expressing, the idea that a Rebbe is given a certain kalim, and then they can, as best as possible, reproduce what the Rebbe would have said, that, I think, is a critical point. And here is the first idea of overlap. Maybe you can call it dialectic. On the one hand, we said, hemidu tamidim harbe. The Rebbe is supposed to give the Talmidim a sense of independence. But mitzad sheni, the Talmud sees himself not as independent from, but as a hemshech of the Rav. And I don't think it's a contradiction. That self-perception, it's not about whether everything you say your Rebbe did say, and I won't go as extreme as Rebbe Eliezer, or even that you're sure that everything you said the Rebbe would have said. Maybe you can't be so sure. But the sense that I'm thinking, analyzing, learning, teaching the way my Rebbe did, that you see yourself, as much as your Rebbe made you independent, but from the Talmud's perspective, you see yourself as a continuation. You see yourself as taking the next step. It's something very, very healthy. And I want to mention two final things before we conclude, and that is, one is an amazing, amazing teaching, a halacha in the Gemara, which the Rambam, I think, takes us to the next level on. And you see, again, this exact, the certain reciprocity or overlapping between the way a Rebbe sees his Talmidim and the Talmud sees his Rebbe, and that is an incredible halacha, the Gemara says in Makos Taf Yura Meralis. Talmud Shegola or Gola Megalin Rabo Imo. If a student kills somebody by accident, we know the halacha is a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, has to go to Golos, has to go to the Ir Miklat. So if a Talmud does that, and a Talmud has to go to Golos, the Gemara says an astounding thing, his Rebbe has to go to Golos too. Now you think about that, you have to leave your family, go to the Ir Miklat. That's if you know, were chopping wood and by accident killed somebody. But says the Gemara, if a Talmud does this, if a student does that, his Rebbe has to go to Golos too. Mehechetesi, where do we get it from? So the Gemara says, because the Pasuk says in Sefer Dvarim, when it's talking about the Rosh HaShogeg, V'chai, that he'll run to the Ir Miklat and he'll live there. But says the Gemara, Ovelei midi, tetahavelei chayusa. You have to do everything that the Talmud needs to live. Now, the implication is quite astounding. And the Rambam draws out this distinction in source number 15 with an amazing thing. The Gemara, after first just quoting the straightforward Gemara, which the Gemara is amazing in its own right, but then the Rambam continues, source number 15, V'chaye balei chachma u'mvaksheha below Talmud, kemisa chashuvin. Somebody who's truly an ohev Torah, someone who's an intellectual, for lack of a better term, someone who wants to learn, who lives a life of Torah, then being without Torah, chaye below Talmud, is actually death, right? Again, it's just the implication of the Gemara, but the Rambam teases it out. You can't live without Torah from the word v'chai. To be without Torah, to be in the golos, without your Torah, you're not living. Now, that is itself an astounding and significant statement of the Gemara and of the Rambam about the importance of learning, that a life without learning is death. But if you think about it, there is something slightly off with this, especially the way the Rambam interprets it. After all, the importance of learning, I get. But why the importance of learning from the Rebbe? If you tell me that the Ir Miklats have to have a fund for Svarim, right? Every shul has a certain fund and a library so they can buy new books. So the Ir Miklat need that. After all, you can't send someone to Golos if you won't be able to learn Daf Yomi, if you won't be able to learn Torah. Because, and you could have said the Rambam's exact line, Chaye Bai Chachmu Vakshev Belo Talmud Kibiz Chashuv. You have to provide Svarim. But why does the Rebbe have to go? I think you see clearly implied in this is that learning, but without your Rebbe, you can't live without a Rebbe. Not just live without Torah. A person can learn without a Rebbe. What if there's other Rebbeim in the Ir Miklat? The Ritva makes that point. You need your Rebbe, not just without Torah, but if you have a relationship. So on the one hand, a Talmud without his Rebbe has no life. But the Gemara, less celebrated, the Gemara says the opposite is also true. If a Rebbe kills somebody by accident, they're Megala in the whole yeshiva with him. But the Gemara there gives no drusha, no source, no explanation. But the Meiri on the Gemara, source number 16, the Meiri says it's the exact same thing. That a Rebbe without his Talmidim, ain't lo chayim below yeshiva. But the Rebbe can learn. The Rebbe has Sfarim. The Rebbe's on sabbatical. A true Rebbe who's dedicated to his Talmidim, Rav below Talmud, Rav below Yeshiva, Kamisa Chashuvin. So it's the same thing. From the Talmud's perspective, he can't live without his Rebbe. But from a Rebbe's perspective, he can't live without his Talmidim. An amazing, amazing, striking thing. This is what a true Rebbe-Talmud relationship is. And just to conclude, I want to just mention one last point. The Gemara in Masechta Baba Kama says something really shocking initially in Daf Chaf. Gemara says that Rav Chizda asked a question from Rami Bar Chama, and Rami Bar Chama wouldn't answer him until Rav Chizda was Mesharis him. Serve me, do something, get me coffee, then I'll answer you. Now again, if you were checking out a high school for your children, or for that matter, you came to Eretz Yisrael to visit on winter vacation, and you know, on Monday you were in Gush, and on Tuesday you were in Shalavim, and you were sitting in on the shir, and a Talmud raised his hand and asked the Rebbe a question, and the Rebbe said, I'm only going to answer if you first get me a cup of coffee, what would your reaction be?
I'd like
yeshiva. I think the average person, Hamev and Yavin, the average person would run for the door. Would run for the door. At least to a different shir in that yeshiva, if not a different yeshiva. So what is going on? What's the pshat? Again, this is kind of like some pre-modern abusive Rebbe-Talmud relationship. Chas v'shalom. So in the introduction to the Sefer Shara Yosher, which is a very, very highly analytical, complex work of Gemara logic from Shimon Shkup, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Grodno, Talmud of Tells. So he there quotes in the introduction something he heard from his brother-in-law, a man who I'm happy to mention his name. He should live at L'Shem Bel Tiferes, even though I never heard of him before otherwise. Rav Kalman Abel Mitels, his brother-in-law. What was the pshat? He says something really incredible. Shadavar shetzorach iyun v'yegia toli ikar hadavar emislamid ma'amin ma'alas malamdo. Says the Shar Yosher, quoting his brother-in-law, what we would call, I'll put it in modern parlance, a Mishnah Brura question. A fact. Some people just don't have the information that the Rebbe has, that the Shul Rabbi has. So you call up. It's not the most complicated thing, but there's an information gap. The Rebbe has the information, the Talmud doesn't. You ask a question. So for that, you just need a Rebbe who knows something. You need a Talmud who wants to know. You don't need more than that. But says Rav Shimon, there are so many things in learning or in life which are not, quote-unquote, a Mishnah Berurah question. They're complex. They're confusing. It's a world of gray. The hard questions, whether it's in a sugya, or the hard questions of life, it only works if the Talmud trusts his Rebbe. If the Talmud trusts the Rebbe, then he's willing to take that leap of faith and follow the advice or the insight of the Rebbe. But without that trust as the ultimate glue to hold the relationship together, there's only so far. The Rebbe is good as a maramakom. The Rebbe knows more Torah than the Talmud. But without that trust, the buy-in, as we might say, the Rebbe can't be a mora derech. And he explains that's what the Gemara was doing. It wasn't, looking just for kavod or, you know, I need a servant, so cheap labor from the Talmud. It was a way of the Talmud expressing, I'm loyal to you, Rebbe. I'll do anything you need. When the Rebbe realized that the Talmud truly, truly trusted him, then he knew that even if he gave him complex or difficult advice, or a difficult answer, the Rebbe knew that the Talmud would trust him. And trust is the cornerstone. If the Rebbe cannot inspire, does not deserve the trust of the Talmud, then there's a significant limit to how far that relationship can go, how much the Talmud can grow from his Rebbe. And therefore he concludes, Kasher yada Rami bar Chom es omek ha'inyin sheratz lalamdo, lerotz lalamdo achi es ames lo sharav chizem shtokek lislamid mimenu ketalmud meirav. And he says that's the similar idea of being shimush. One second, please, let me just finish. So the idea of shimush, it's all about trust. It's not about power. Chas v'shalom. If you see a Rebbe like that, you should run for the door. No true Rebbe is looking for power over his Talmidim. Chas v'shalom. But there has to be, a Rebbe knows, a Talmud knows, and I've been blessed to be both. Without that trust, then it's just a book. It's book knowledge. You can get that, you can get from the internet. That you can get from books. But the relationship built on trust and mutual dedication, if the Talmud gives that to the Rebbe, then they can grow. And just like we saw in the earlier sources, there's a certain reciprocity. I think with this I'll conclude, it goes as well. On the one hand, yes, the Rebbe demands trust. The Talmud should trust his Rebbe. On the other hand, once you have that, it gets a boomerang. It gets reciprocated, because then the Talmud will receive trust. Trust in what? Trust in the Mesorah. And this is a very beautiful idea that Rav Lichtenstein used to say many times, and it's included in a very famous article of his, how when he was growing up, right, then, you know, when he was a kid, you know, he had kind of questions that we don't necessarily have as kids, but what people like you and me have in our teens and our 20s, you know, Rav Lichtenstein might have had when he was about 12, deep questions, philosophical questions, and said Rav Lichtenstein, I never found answers to all of them. I didn't have answers. I don't have answers to all of them, says Rav Lichtenstein. But what I have is trust in the Mesorah. Where did he get that trust? He said very beautifully, very famously, I got that from my Rebbeim. He speaks in this particular part of the article about two of the Rebbeim, two of his three Rebbeim, about the Rav and Rav Huttner, that what I saw from my Rebbeim, well, it was not necessary to have all the answers, but to learn how to live with questions. Regardless of the issues, moral, theological, historical, they vexed me, but I was confident that they had been raised by masters far sharper and wiser than myself. And if they had remained impregnably steadfast in their commitment, so should and could I. There are questions that don't have answers. And if my Rebbeim can live with the questions, I've learned to trust the Mesorah, to trust in Hashem from those Rebbeim. And if Rav Huttner could live with certain things despite his external sense of being certain about things, says Rav Lichtenstein, so could I. And if the Rav could, the depth and intensity of their Avodas Hashem became doubly reassuring. So again, I conclude by pointing out we see the same idea yet again. What the Talmud gives to the Rebbe in trust and loyalty and dedication, he gets back tenfold. Because that trust and dedication will give him the independence and the trust and confidence in the Mesorah. The key to the Mesorah, the key to everything, is the dual loyalty and commitment that the Rebbe has to the Talmud and that the Talmud has to the Rebbe. That commingling of independence and dependence, of trust and loyalty and dedication, it's not only the key to success for the Rebbe and the Talmud, it's the secret. It's the secret to the Mesorah. When we're, as Rebbeim, we want to give everything to our Talmidim to help them be the next link in the chain. But it only happens, the Rebbe, no matter how dedicated he is, if the Talmidim share that similar dedication to the higher and shared purpose. And if we can do that, then, Emir Hashem, we should all have great success and nachas from our children, and banecha, elu talmidecha, from our talmidim as well. It's a pleasure now to turn the floor over to my dear friend, Rabbi Teretzky, and the Shir, but I'll just take one question because I don't want to take any more time from Rabbi Teretzky. Oh.